About a billion people, of which 98% live in developing countries, live more than 2 kilometers away from the nearest all-weather road. So this lack of connectivity is just a massive constraint for the world's poor.
Welcome to Vox DevTalks. My name is Tim Phillips. In high and low income countries alike, infrastructure projects are often seen as expensive and problematic. Who's going to get the benefit? How do we measure the impact? And could the money be better spent on something else? A national road building program in rural India gave one researcher the opportunity to estimate the impact of new roads on the productivity and the type of agriculture in previously isolated villages. And Yogita Shamdasani of the National University of Singapore is that economist, and she joins me now. Yogita, welcome.
Hi, Tim.
First of all, how much of rural India is lacking these all-weather roads? And is the lack of good road infrastructure typical of developing countries?
So at the turn of the century in 2000, prior to the launch of this national program that I study, an estimated 40% of India's rural villages lacked any single all-weather road access. Okay, wow. And so this corresponds to approximately 300 million people living in villages characterized by really low spatial mobility with very limited access to basic economic and social services. And this lack of connectivity is not at all unique to India. So if you look at estimates out of the World Bank, about a billion people, of which 98% live in developing countries, live more than 2 kilometers away from the nearest all-weather road. So this lack of connectivity is just a massive constraint for the world's poor.
As you say, this program has launched in 2000, a national road building program. What kind of roads did it aim to build?
Yeah, so this program was called the Prime Minister's Rural Road Building Program. So it was big policy rolled out in rural parts of the country. And it's a really large-scale program with the goal of providing unconnected villages, so villages that lack any single all-weather road connectivity with an all-weather road. Right. And so the types of roads that you should be thinking about are, you know, small single lane roads. Right. So these are not massive highway systems that are coming in. It's going to be a small paved road that's going to provide households with access to the closest market center. And I want to just talk a little bit about this all-weather road, right? You know, what does it actually mean? Why should we care about this emphasis? I think it's particularly important in the agricultural setting because the onset of monsoon rains, which typically indicates the start of the growing season, right? That's when you go into the fields, happens to coincide exactly with the time of the year where, you know, your dirt or your fair weather road becomes completely waterlogged and completely inoperable for several months in the year, right? So the timing of this is actually quite crucial because it's precisely at the time where farmers need access to roads where they don't have it.
So I'd imagine in 2000, when this is announced, there's hundreds of thousands of places that would really like a road. So which places qualify?
Right.
Which ones get to the front of the queue?
So you're right in that there were lots and lots of villages that were in line for this. And actually, the program is still ongoing. So, you know, it's been 20 years and they're still building these roads. So the goal, as I said, was to build it in places that lacked any single all-weather road. So first off, you had to be unconnected. And within this big list of unconnected villages, they prioritized the larger villages before the smaller ones. And so in the time period that I study, they're going to use a population cutoff of 500 individuals. So the village has to have at least 500 people in order to be eligible for a program road at the time.
So I introduced this as the impact on agriculture, but of course, really, it's the impact on the farmers, the people who are living in these villages, isn't it? So what sort of farmers are we talking about here? What sort of farms do they have? What crops do they grow?
Yeah, so I'm going to be thinking about farmers who live in really remote parts of the country. So they're in remote villages, they're far away from the closest town or the urban center. Primarily, these households are engaged in agriculture. Some of them have their own land, so they're cultivating their own land. Some of them work in the wage labor market for agriculture, and some of them do both. And then at baseline, what I see is that most of these households are just growing subsistence crops. You know, so they're growing cereal crops, which in the context of India, it's rice. And so they're growing crops mainly for home consumption.
Mm-hmm. And how might a road help them?
Great question. So you could think that roads might do so many things, right, in helping farmers. And so you could think about that, you know, the straight up roads lower transport costs for inputs. Now I can go and bring in the fertilizers from the market. It also allows me to go to the market to get better quality seeds that I didn't have as easy access to before. I can also take my crops to the market, or I can let traders come in, right? So there's a lot of this movement in terms of goods. You can also think about the movement of people, right? And so you could think about roads facilitating the movement of workers, and now farmers can now access labor from different labor markets that have now become integrated across space as a result of these new roads. You could also think about information flowing, right? So now I have access to extension workers. I have access to people in neighboring villages who can tell me more about what types of seeds do really well in the microclimates that we face. You could think about access to credit. So there are lots and lots and lots of ways you could think about roads helping farmers. And I'm going to try to actually get at which of these channels seem to be playing a role in this particular context. And I'll talk a little bit about that later on.
Okay, great. But first of all, I have to ask the question. I ask this question every week.
Yeah.
To isolate the effect, then you have to be able to compare similar villages, some of which had access to a road and some of which did not. But we've already said there was a sort of conditionality on who got a road. So how can we do this?
Right. So within the set of the eligible villages, the larger ones still got priority over the smaller villages, right? So there's not, it's not random in how it was assigned. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to employ what we economists call a difference in differences framework, which is that I'm going to compare two groups of villages at two different points of time. Okay. So I'm going to think about 2000 before any roads were built, and in 2006 when some roads are built. And so by 2006, the larger eligible villages would have received the program road, and the smaller eligible villages had not received the program roads yet. And so I'm going to compare these two groups in 2000, and I'm going to compare them in 2006. And what I'm doing in this setup is I'm actually making a pretty strong assumption, which is that had the program not come in the absence of this program, the outcomes in these two different groups would trend in the same way. Right? They don't have to be exactly the same. They are different types of villages, but they would trend in the same way, and they would continue to trend in the same way had the program not come in. And I actually verify this in the data by looking at trends and outcomes such as, you know, the share of agricultural workers across these different groups prior to the road building program. And also, you know, to sort of fix ideas a little bit more, if we think about the villages that were eligible, these are all small, dinky villages that didn't have a road, right? And so even the larger villages that did get a road first, they're not super different from the smaller ones that got the roads a little bit later. You know, they're slightly bigger, you know, they might have a population that's a few hundred individuals more. But if you look at characteristics such as distance to the closest bus stop or the distance to the closest bank, they're actually not that different. So they're all pretty isolated, they're all remote, and they're largely agricultural villages. But yeah, so that's how I get at the causal effect here.
So when you looked at these results for the changes between 2000 and 2006, the headline result, first of all, did it affect the yield, the crop yield? Did it affect what crops were grown?
Absolutely. What farmers begin to do is they begin to diversify. And so what I mean by that is that in addition to growing the staple crops that they were used to growing before, they now start cultivating non-cereal crops, you know, things like pulses and cash crops. And these are crops that we typically see grown for commercial purposes, right? So they plan to go and sell it in the wholesale market. So that indicates some intention to actually start marketing these crops.
And to dig into this, are they using the roads maybe to get better seeds or to use more fertilizer in that way?
Yes. So what I find is that they also begin adopting better seeds, right? High yielding variety seeds to be exact. And so these are seeds that, you know, are higher yielding, but also importantly are more input intensive. So you need to put in the fertilizer, you need to give it more water. And so what I see subsequently is that farmers are now adopting these material inputs more frequently. So they're using fertilizer, they're using irrigation, and they're also using a lot more labor on their land, right? Because these activities are labor intensive. And so as a result, I see almost a 50% increase in how much labor they hire on their land.
It sounds from what you're saying that they're using this opportunity to then take what they grow to market, using the roads for that.
Right, exactly. So I do find that they're now more likely to sell their crops, right? In particular, these high-yielding variety crops that they start growing after the roads are built. And this could be because now they have access to the market, right? But it could also be, you know, going back to what I said earlier, it could also be because now they have access to these high-yielding variety seeds that they didn't have before, or they have access to credit that allows them to purchase these inputs that they didn't have before. And so I try and tease apart these different mechanisms with various tests in the paper.
Inputs and outputs, these are the obvious explanations. Are there other explanations for how they're growing more that we can either rule in or that you tested and ruled out?
I actually find evidence that's strongly consistent with the integration of labor markets across space playing an important role.
Gosh.
And so if you think about what the roads are doing, they're coming in and they're connecting village labor markets across space. And so essentially it's increasing the labor supply from which a farmer can draw, right? And so now they have this bigger labor market that they can draw from in times of labor-intensive practices. And so I actually then see them switching to these more labor-intensive production technologies. I don't find very strong evidence and support for changes in access to credit. So, you know, I don't see them demanding more credit. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of action in terms of information flows. But, you know, I caveat this with that to some extent, all of these channels are at play, right? And so what I find is stronger evidence for these labor market channels, but, you know, I can't rule out any of these other channels, and I wouldn't want to rule them out because I think when you think about what roads are doing, they're changing a lot of different constraints for different farmers. And so I think to some extent, all of these channels are likely at play, but it seems to be that the labor market integration plays a particularly important role here.
Recently, we spoke to your colleague, your co-author, Supreet Kaur, on the paper that you were an author on, the paper on labor rationing, where you find that perhaps a lot of people who are farming in rural communities would really rather prefer a job. So is maybe one of the effects of building these all-weather roads that some people will use them to go off and find a job?
Absolutely. And in fact, I actually do find this in this paper as well. So what I see in places that are close to urban centers at baseline, so you have, you know, you're within 10 kilometers of a town, I see this huge, massive exit from agriculture. So people move out of agriculture into wage employment in non-agricultural jobs. But the places that I focus on in this paper are places that, despite getting a road, you know, remain to be areas where access to non-agricultural opportunities are still extremely limited, right? So even with a small all-weather road, traveling more than 10 kilometers a day to access a non-agricultural job is pretty taxing on a household. And so we don't see this movement once we go further away, but instead we see these huge gains in agriculture that I document in this paper.
Well, this seems like a really good news story for what's happening for these farmers because they have access to roads. But we get back to where I started. When you ask people what they think of infrastructure projects, they say roads cost a lot of money. Now, does your research imply that really they've been very good value? We should actually be diverting more money to this road building program.
So unfortunately, I think I'm going to disappoint you here, Tim, because I don't have a clear answer. So I can't say for sure that, you know, we should divert money away from policy X towards road building programs, right? For that, we would need to do a full cost benefit analysis. But what I can say with conviction is that we show that roads are transformative for agriculture in remote parts of the country. And there's also been great work that looks at the same program that I do, and they look at other outcomes that economists often care about, thinking about access to schooling, access to healthcare, and they find overwhelmingly positive impacts, right? So now kids are more likely to stay in school, they're doing better on standardized tests, women are more likely to access reproductive health services, newborns do better, right? So there are just tons of evidence now, I think, that these small roads that we haven't really thought about very hard in the past actually do have the ability to transform rural economies. And I think this evidence can definitely be taken a step further into thinking about how should we continue to build infrastructure in these places where still many, many individuals are living without access to basic connectivity.
This certainly is something worth celebrating, isn't it, Yogita? Thank you very much for talking about it today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tim.
The paper is called Rural Road Infrastructure and Agriculture Production, Evidence from India, and the author is Yogita Shamdasani. Remember also our recent Vox Dev talk with Supreet Kaur on labor rationing. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. So go on, do it now.